up, my free Brightoninos? It's the verbal warrior Isaac Bright coming to you live and direct straight from the historic West Adams District in La 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 Land. It's a special day today. Why is it a special day? Because I'm recording this podcast on June 7th. And on June 7th, it's always a special day. Why? Because
he only knew her for a little while. Mm-mm-mm. But he had grown accustomed to her style. Mm-mm-mm. She had the cutest ass he'd ever seen. Mm-mm-mm. She did too. They were meant to be.
That's right. It's Prince's birthday, June 7th. And my mom's birthday is June 6th. Go figure. What are the odds? The great mom Dukes of Isaac Bright has her birthday a day before the purple one has her birthday. But I can't continue to go on as I'm about to do a beautiful show for you people on this beautiful day that is Prince Day. I can't go on without introducing my co-host, the one, the very little baby Yoo-hoo, Yoo-hoo. Oh my God, what an amazing day today. Not only is it Prince's birthday, you have to do something special for Prince's birthday. It's hard for me to play Prince music during Prince's birthday. I know it's been 5 years, but I still, there's something still with me playing Prince music. It still hurts. There's a level of it that still hurts. I know. Everybody's like, hey, you gotta celebrate him. Hey, you know, this is a beautiful thing, his legacy and all that. But it still hurts to play his music because it still stings. Even 5 years later, it still stings because, I mean, I got his Sign of the Times box set, big, enormous expenditure with all these discs, and I got the album for my vinyl, and there's all these unreleased tracks, and there's three of them, you know, all this unbelievable material, and I have barely gotten through one album because it's hard to listen to. And the reason for me, I think why am I having such a problem? Because, you know, everybody's like, oh, this new unreleased track and all this stuff that's never been, well, he's not here anymore. And there's a finite number of Prince music left to listen to because he's not creating anything. And I know that everybody's like, oh, his vault's going to have 50, 60, 70 years of unreleased music. Well, but still, that's 50, 60, 70 years. It comes to an end. And it's just my psychology of the whole situation is I want to savor every single song. So I'm like listening to a side of the vinyl and I just like leave it alone for a month or two. And then I come back and I'll re-listen to it and then I'll re-listen to a song. And then I eventually turn the other side over. So it's going to take me forever to get through this stuff. And I just want to savor his music. It's just how I feel about it. But yesterday was a beautiful day because I went and I got my bitchin' 79 Camaro, brought it back home for the first time in my new place. It's a 79. Ugh, it's a beast and it needs still so much work, but, driving that car, man, it's a beautiful thing. I just feel like myself. I feel like I'm meant to drive this car. There's a whole story. I think we went into this in one of my earlier podcasts with what's his name, but I just feel like a man. I feel like a human. I feel connected to something real. Like it's a real car. It's not just made of plastic and ideas. It's rooted in iron and industry in America. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but really you feel like you're just, you know, you're not being bombarded by computers and, you know, you're going too far to the left. You're going far to the right. There's somebody behind you. There's somebody to the left of you. You sure you want to take a rest? Oh, you don't want to back up. It's not backing me into a, I always laugh at these people. They need to have their car parallel park for them. What? Because people don't have a parallel park. That's the problem. I can't believe, you know, people are not given the test of how to parallel park in their driver's test. Like that should be the first thing. Like, do you know how to parallel park? Cause you see people, they take for fucking ever to parallel park their car. They're in, they're out, they're back, they're forward, they're up, they're down, they start over again. They, you know, it's ridiculous. And you know, this Camaro, it's huge and you better know how to parallel park to park that Camaro or else you're going to be hitting all sorts of things. But I got it home and it's just sitting there and I've in the past since I've had it home, I've just walked outside to the backyard and looked at it every 20 minutes, just sitting there, and it just warms my heart. And we've been through a lot. That's 9-10 years of lots of money, of ups and downs, and and dragging it all over town and having it conk out in the middle of the street. And it slid down Laurel Canyon once when I was with my fiance while we were driving to ArcLight. The control arm broke, and we literally, it was like a land speeder. It slid like a half a mile. It was like tobogganing down Laurel Canyon. And the first time I actually got it running, I took it down to some crazy person down in the hood to get the belts taken care of, as I got a recommendation from one of my guys who's a race car driver. And this drunk guy trying to find the right belt, he doesn't speak a lick of English. And it's just all the insanity I brought with this car. But I'm getting it done. I'm going to get it 100% restored and shiny and all the look, pimp my ride type style to it. And it's going to be back, and it's going to be the greatest thing in the world. So I'm very excited about that. So whatever car that, I don't know, everybody's got their own car. I think their classic car that is meant for them. And I think you should find yours and go get it and drive it and remind yourself what it is to be a human instead of a machine inside of a machine that's telling you every single little thing. Your temperature has risen. It seems like you need to pinch a loaf. What do you usually want to go and, you know, telling you that there's these coupons that are available 5 minutes down the road. Go get it. Go get this burger. It's absurd. So anyway, I think I don't want to let Prince go just yet. I just want to – I've been thinking a lot about him. I mean, I think about him every day because I the major reason I'm on Insta is because I'm connected to all these Prince accounts. So I get to see them post all these cool videos and concert footage that maybe I've not seen. I've seen so much. It's hard to make me see something I haven't seen before. But still, you never know. You get these little tidbits or gems, and I think about him so much. And God, you know, I think the prevailing thing for me when I think about Prince is I just wish he was not just here because, you know, you want to see him creating music and performing and just being on this planet, but God, I would have loved for him to voice his opinion on the insanity that's been happening the past year, especially being in Minneapolis. I mean, he would have absolutely had a major impact on what had been going down with the BLM terrorist organization. So, you see, who are the artists that are out there that are actually speaking out against the mainstream narrative? I don't know if you can even think of any. Everybody's just these industry pawns that are falling in line, and, you know, they're talking about being safe and staying inside and, you know, doing your part and get the jab, and John Smidgen singing, you know, get the jab, and all these people are just doing what they're told and not questioning anything. I don't know of any artists. I mean, who are the mainstream main artists out there? Lady Gugu, Bianchi, and all these other people. They're not doing anything. Bruce Springsteen's interviewing Barack Shmabalama Ding Dong. Like, nobody is actually standing up. It's not the 60s and 70s or even the 80s. Nobody's standing up. And I think out of everybody, Prince would definitely not have gone along with this nonsense. He would definitely have spoken out, and in his own way, maybe he would have written a song, or maybe he would have done something. And it might even have been quiet, because a lot of the stuff that he donated to, he did it on the down low. He never wanted his name to come out. But he would have absolutely had something to say about what's going on, and not towing the line to the point where he would have been out there saying, everybody get the jab. I mean, he would have been like, hell no. I think something that might even reinforce, if you're questioning what Prince would have done, he never was the consensus reality type guy. He always raged against, in his own way, he raged against the industry. He raged against getting rights for artists. And he, you know, even when people were like, again, falling in line, hey, this is what we're doing, everybody has to do their part, he was like, F you. I think back to one of the most publicized events that, especially in the 80s at the height of his career, not so much the 90s when he was, again, railing against the entire music industry, trying to get artists their rights and to own their actual material. That was a whole other McGilla. But in the 80s, his big middle finger to consensus reality as to what artists should be putting their time and energy towards was his battle, if you were, against the entire We Are the World Live Aid situation, as he didn't feel he wanted to be a part of it. And maybe, you know, for his own reasons. And I think his own reasons were proven to be true as the ultimate result of what happened from all of that, charitable causes, didn't actually end up doing much of anything. And that, we'll speak on that in a bit, but, you know, Bob Geldof, whatever, Dickaroo Schmickaroo, he had an idea, all right, so, you know, yeah, Do They Know It's Christmas, he did the UK thing, and then now is the Americans' turn to, you know, do their version, and of course, Michael Jackson, Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones, they write a song, and they want, everybody's now gonna do their version of, Do They Know It's Christmas, and listen, Prince is at the top of the world. It's 1984, 1985. He is on top of the world. He had one of the most successful music films in the history of music films. He had the most successful tour probably at that point in the entire 80s. He's got hit upon hit upon hit. He's at the top of his game. And so, you know, and so is Michael Jackson. But they're rivals. Okay? It's not, you know, and Michael Jackson inviting him to sing on the song that he wrote to do this one little line in a song where everybody, you know, everybody's packed into a studio in a video, and he wants Prince to come sing one line that he ended up giving to Huey Lewis of Huey Lewis and the News. So it was good enough for Huey Lewis, but you wanted to make it good enough for Prince. Like, that's like Magic Johnson asking Larry Bird, hey, I'm putting this team together. You want to sit on the bench? No. You know, it's like the Beatles asking Mick Jagger, hey, Mick, we wrote the song and you want to come sing on the chorus for it? That's an awful accent. But, you know, I'm Mick Jagger. It's the 60s. I'm at the top. I'm in the Rolling Stones. I'm not going to sing on a chorus for the Beatles. And that's kind of like what it was. I mean, yes, this is all ego, but it very much was, hey, you know, I'm Prince. Because Michael Jackson in the video, he's alone in the studio and he's got the headphones on and he's singing so passionately. And you want Prince to just be one of 2-3 dozen artists in a studio singing his one line? No. No, absolutely not.
Could you imagine Michael calling Prince, trying to get him to sing on We Are the World?
Come on, Prince.
No.
It's for the children.
No.
It's for the babies.
No.
It's for Africa.
No.
They're hungry.
No.
They need to eat.
No.
Prince, it's just a line, Prince.
No.
Just one single line.
No.
I'll make you a sandwich, Prince.
No.
Michael, I wrote you a song.
You did? That's great. What's it called?
It's called No.
You know, and it bit him in the ass because what happened was, you know, everybody, it was at the end of an awards show and it was either the American Music Awards or the Grammys. And it was 1985. And at the end of the show, everybody was going to the studio to record and be shot on the video for the We Are the World song. And Prince wanted nothing to do with it. And his management was like, listen, okay, that's fine. If that's what you're going to do, that's fine. But please, whatever you do, it's after the Grammys, just keep a low profile and don't go out and do anything crazy and don't make, you know, headlines. Just make it low. Go back to your crib, have a party at your crib, go hang out with Eddie Murphy, whatever the hell you want to do. Go make some pancakes, go play some basketball, just chill. And what does Prince do? He's Prince, so he's like, do whatever the hell I want. And he ends up going to a club. And it's funny, I actually know the guy, I know a guy who was connected to people who were in the club at that night when this incident went down and actually knew all of the intricacies of the relationships that actually caused this incident to happen, which is insane. That's a whole other story. But he goes to a club and his bodyguard gets into a fight with other bodyguards and then the whole mess goes on. It's a club on Sunset Strip that used to be Dublin's. It was dubbed something else and now I don't even think it is anything anymore. And he makes the headlines the next day, you know, Prince bodyguard and everybody gets into a fight and everybody else is out singing for the children and for Africa and we're there to heal the world. And Prince is out of the club getting into fights. And that really had a big smear on his career at that point. It was a big, big smudge. And, you know, it was the first time I think the public really looked at him differently. Like, oh, this guy's just some egotistical, all about himself asshole. And I don't think that was the case at all. I just think, listen, you know, I'm not interested. You can't force me to sing on a song, Michael Jackson. I'm, you know, I'm Prince. And I think you have every right to do that. You can't, you know, he donated to so many charities for so many years and so anonymously. I mean, but at that moment, it was a big, you know, big smudge on him. And then when it came to Live Aid and Bob Geldof was giving him all this shit about why aren't you performing? Why aren't you, you know, and he said, listen, I don't want to perform. I'll write you guys a song. And he wrote them a beautiful song. He wrote them a beautiful song for the Tears in Your Eyes. If you've never heard For the Tears in Your Eyes, it's the number four, The Tears in Your Eyes. You can go Google it and listen to it. It's a singing about Jesus, for God's sake. A beautiful song. He records a video with Lisa and Wendy on it, sends it to them, it plays at Live Aid, and like, that's what I'm good for. And he was lambasted in the press. Prince, all about himself. And, you know, hey, Bruce Springsteen didn't perform at Live Aid. He said, oh, I'm coming off a tour, I'm tired, you know, just kidding. No, Bruce is off the hook. I don't think Michael Jackson performed at Live Aid. But Prince got a big, you know, he was used as being selfish. And, you know, on one of his B-side songs, God, I miss the B-side songs, when they used to release albums and 12-inch singles, and Prince, some of his best music and some of his best work sometimes was on the B-side of an album that was a single that was released. Was amazing songs on his B-side singles. One of them was called Hello. And in that song, you know, he's like, what was the lyric? It's like, we're against hungry children. Our record stands tall. There's just as much hunger here at home. And he's right. You know, we're here. I mean, not that there's nothing noble about going to try to save Africa and donate to African children. But hey, man, we got a major homeless situation happening here in the U.S. There's just as much hunger here at home. In a sense, he's railing against the nation building and the charitable efforts that our country is extending itself outside of its own borders, where, you know, we got enough going on here. It's just like what happened in the 90s. We're nation building in Iraq and all these other countries and building bridges there. And yet we can't, you know, our infrastructure is crumbling. So, and there's nothing wrong with him having that viewpoint. And again, lambasted it in the press. And then what happens with all the money that they made from Live Aid? I think they made $127 million here in the United States, and then it was like 50 or 45 million in the UK. And what does Geldof Schmeldof do? Putz. Okay, so you're like, all right, so there's this all this energy around donating to Africa, and they're pulling at your heartstrings, and they're pulling at your emotions, and they're getting, oh my God, you know, and the flies flying around the naked little babies sitting on the dirt, and you're like, oh my God, this is awful. I have to do something. And they prey upon your emotions. This is what they do. And you give and you give and you give, and the artists are out there, and they're parading themselves, and hey, you know, this is the cause du jour, and you give and you give and you give so much money, and they're on the phone like, I'm taking a call now, and what happens? He takes all that money and he gives it to an Ethiopian dictator. Look it up. Some guy named Mengdishu, I believe, who did nothing with it. It went to no African children, maybe a couple $100. It went to nothing. There's no proof whatsoever that $150, $60, $70 million that he gave to Ethiopia, of all places, went anywhere. And he's even on record, Bob Geldof is even on record as saying, I'd shake hands and do a deal with the devil if it means getting money to the right people. Well, Bobby, you shook hands with the devil, but the money didn't get to the right people, and it didn't have the effect that you thought it would. So at the end of the day, all your grandstanding and all your virtue signaling, which is that year, day, that the 80s version of virtue signaling, didn't do jack shit. So Prince was right. And he has done more in his career, in his life, for the people of this country and the world, for all we know, than you ever did. So screw you. I gotta, you know, be jerky about it, but I mean, it's the same thing with Bono. Remember Bono and his One Foundation? They were going to donate millions of dollars in Africa. Go look that up. Go do the research on what money ended up actually going to help Africa through Bono's One Foundation that was connected to the United Nations, which was one of the most despicable organizations in the history of the universe. Go look up Bono. Nothing. Went nowhere. Didn't help anybody. It's like giving to the Red Cross. Don't you ever give to the Red Cross. It's one of the worst organizations in the history of the universe also. That money will get to nobody. It gets to nobody. It's administrative costs, 85%, 15%. We'll give it to the people. It's not saying they're not good people in the Red Cross. But oh my God, that is a horrible organization. I would also say the BLM is a horrible organization, as people are now starting to come out and say, where's all the money that we've been giving to people and giving to this organization? Where's the BLM community centers? Where's the BLM scholarships? Where is this money, that billions of dollars that were donated in the name of justice and racial equality? Where has the money gone? And all you're seeing is the co-founder of the organization, who has now stepped down, buying her fifth property, one of them in Topanga Canyon, for $1.5 million. Yeah, man. They're all junk. And Prince would not have been a part of any of that stuff. And he was doing stuff on his own, and he was doing stuff anonymously, and he was doing stuff from his heart. And that's what we have to – it's not about showing everybody. It's about just doing it and not having to get a name from yourself. And that's what he was about. There's a great moment in an awards show in the 90s that they've been circulating this clip around the socials on Insta lately, which was pretty funny, where I think it's the 10th anniversary of We Are the World, and I don't know if it's the Grammys, it might be a Black award show, because I don't know if there was anybody besides Black artists on the stage. Everybody's on the stage. It's at the end of the show. Harry Belafonte's on there, Anita Baker, all these other Black artists, and maybe who else? I'm not really sure. But standing in the middle in a bright yellow canary outfit is Prince, and he's got the short cropped hair, and he's got these dark sunglasses on, and he's standing there while everybody's singing We Are the World, and he's sucking on a red blow pop. And he's standing right next to Quincy Jones, who's there in a tuxedo, and he's singing so earnestly and with such gusto and such gravitas, and there's Prince sucking on a blow pop, and Quincy keeps looking over at him, and at some point Quincy Jones takes his microphone and he puts it near Prince's mouth, and you want to sing, and Prince takes out his blow pop and he goes and he puts it under Quincy Jones' mouth. I'm like, do you want to suck on my blow pop? and Quincy Jones actually bends over for a moment and goes to try and actually suck on the blow pop. And Prince is like, yeah, get the hell away from me. So, middle of an awards show, Prince is like, yeah, F you and F your ridiculous charitable event. You guys have no idea what you're doing. And this is what I feel about it. And I would hope he'd be doing something like that today. It's safe to say he definitely would. God, I wish he was here to speak up about it, but it hurts. 5 years, it still hurts. It hurts. And my Prince show is coming back. I'm telling you guys, it's going to come back soon, God willing. Maybe not this year, probably next year, 2022. All right, well, let's take a quick little break, and when we come back, we'll have the scrumptiliumptious Miss Kelly Puente.
Hungry? Time for a burger? And go to Burger Lounge. Burger Lounge has the best burgers in all Los Angeles. Oh my goodness, they're delicious for $10. You can get yourself a grass-fed beef burger. Delicious. I don't know why they call it a Burger Lounge, because there's not really any soft spaces to sit down like in a lounge that you would, maybe a velvet chair or a duvet or a fainting couch. But it's still Burger Lounge, and I love Burger Lounge, so go to your Burger Lounge. But don't go to the one in Beverly Hills. They don't know how to bake a burger. It's like they put a flamethrower to the burger. Why do the Beverly Hills Burger Lounge people hate burgers and people? Oh, damn them. Don't go to Beverly Hills. Go to Van Nuys, and they make the best burgers of the Burger Lounges, even though it is still not allowed. Lounge, but that'll be great, and they'll treat your burger right, and tell them I sent you, even though they won't know who the hell I am. Burger Lounge, it's not a lounge, but they got burgers.
Burger. Burger.
All right, well, thank you to our unofficial, unauthorized sponsorship from the one and only Burger Lounge. Again, the best one being in Van Nuys for whatever reason. I went to the one in Larchmont, and it was okay. It was good. It was solid. But I don't know what they do at the hell at Van Nuys. It's just always superior. It's just the best. I don't know why. Just the way it is. I'm just telling it like it is, people. All right. Well, I am about to let the one and only, the most beautiful and intelligent Kelly Puente in, and she's about to show up. So for your listening Brightonino pleasure, here we go with the one and only Kelly Puente.
Well, I am here with the delightful and lovely Kelly Puente, an actual member of the media,
the actual working journalist,
and a working journalist. Well, first of all, we need to get things straight. Have you ever been a member of the Chinese Communist Party?
No, I have not.
So you told the truth. Wait. And do you accept Lucifer as your dark lord and savior?
No.
So you must.
And I have never consciously published fake news.
Oh my God.
At least not deliberately.
Who are you? You are a rare breed.
You said before, it's like how I'm going to talk to you about how the sausage is made. I'm a working local journalist.
Oh my God.
Who does basic news, and it's not fake news, and it drives me nuts when I work my ass off and I get emails from people like fake news.
Why do they say that you have fake news?
Because that's the climate right now.
So anytime you have, so basically it's, if I disagree with it, it's fake news.
Yeah, correct.
If anybody disagrees with anything, then it's fake.
Well, people just have a lack of trust in journalism right now in general. So
which is understandable.
It is understandable there. And I think that it's a myth that journalism is objective. Mm-hmm. It's always, you know, I mean, you look at Fox News, you look at New York Times, and I mean, it's so, I think people are kind of starting to realize that there's the subjectivity there. And
well, the subjectivity is basically coming from, it's a top to bottom, top down, influence that's really being, given to journalists that you have to speak a certain way, you have to report in a certain way, and if you're not in alignment with what the message is that could be coming out from these media organizations, and when you're talking media, it's pretty much six corporations that run the bulk of 90% of the media in the country. So if you're not in line with that message, you're not going to be able to get your message out. You're not going to be able to ascend to a level where you've got some notoriety or a name for yourself unless you basically get in line, at least when you get to the higher levels of media.
I don't know about that. I mean, I do think there's definitely a truth. But I can really speak to just working as a local journalist on a local level and trying my hardest every day to be objective, report fair news, and you know, it's frustrating when people are like, you know, you're printing lies.
And why would they say you were printing lies? What would be an example?
I'm trying to think of some of the more recent ones. Well, I have a funny one where one of my stories went viral. I did a story on why the cargo ships were backed up, and you even sent me.
I did. Yeah.
And this is like blew my mind. I did a story on why all the cargo ships were backed up in the port because it's a perfect storm of COVID, of the ships, like there's no trucks to transport them.
Right.
And they just don't, like it's just a clusterfuck. Right. And so it somehow got picked up on Reddit and all these different sites that because it was right before the election, and people thought it was filled with Chinese insolence or military coming to overthrow the government.
Right.
And people were convinced, and they were emailing me like, you need to investigate this further. I'm like, do you want to come over here and I'll ride with you on my bike down to the port and you can watch them unloading the tanker, you know, like unloading the cargo. My neighbor's a longshoreman. And that was one where people were like telling me that I'm not reporting the correct news and that there are, and there was nothing in there. And it, so it's, to me, it's fascinating how things can get twisted and turned in, and people will read this on Reddit or different things. And even somebody like you who's really good at doing their homework. And, you know, I don't always agree with you.
No, you do not.
But I I respect you for the level of, you know, your intelligence and the effort you put into the research you do. But even that, it's like, so it shows how easily stuff can get twisted.
And it's very hard these days. I mean, it's not like 5-10 years ago where you really could do your research and find nuggets of the truth that kind of coalesce with other bits of information. Mm-hmm. Now there's so much disinformation. Now there is so much that can be twisted, as you said, that it's really, you really have to have a level of discernment within yourself where you're like, well, that makes sense. And even if within you that it could still make sense, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true. It just could be, it could be a shade of the truth. And that's, I think, what we're now left to at this point. Like, we really aren't, we really truly don't know a lot. I mean, we just basically are now philosophizing or basically having our ideas of what may be going on. But I don't know if necessarily any of us truly know at this point what may be. It's all hypothesis.
Well, we're just getting bombarded with news, and it's just, it's twisted. You look on Facebook and what people are sharing, what like our parents are sharing, like my dad will send me stuff. And I'm like, Dad, did you check out the source of this? Or, you know, but, and so it's scary how stuff can be shared and twisted. But that said, I'm also really concerned at the censorship of news too. And where do you draw the line of that? Like, I was, you know, I was shocked when they took like Alex Jones off of YouTube, even though he's such a dickwad, you know, I can't stand him. But I've listened to him.
But he's one of the smartest men in the world. I mean, he's very smart.
With his Rolex watches and smart, like he knows how to sell shit to a bunch of
you
yokels.
You can be intelligent and be a dickwad, but I mean, his level of
he's smart
memory,
like he knows how to sell stuff.
You know, but his memory, his ability to pull facts and to pull like dates out of like thin air from 60 years ago and just riddle off
that's
documents.
True. Yeah.
I mean, it's unparalleled.
Also, Ben Shapiro, I don't agree with Ben Shapiro. He's smart too. That guy, yeah, like one of the great debaters, you know, so I can respect that. But I read this article about how he'd always talked about his past and like where he went to college.
Ben
and
Shapiro?
Alex Jones.
Oh, really?
And it turns out he was like this big bully in Texas high school, and he was just a jerk. And
I mean, Alex Jones was one of the pioneers of actually alternative information.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to him in like the early 2000s. Yeah. I mean, he was against the Bush administration. Yeah. So people like cancel him now. But yeah, I mean, he was the first guys to do this alternative news. And I liked him in the early 2000s.
I did
2000s.
Too.
He lost me with the whole like Sandy Hook, like, you know, just
that
staged
stage
shootings. Yeah. I mean, and then like going after the families, and he even said himself, he went back on and he apologized for that. Cause that here's where I will have a disclaimer for listeners. Yeah. Isaac and I have been friends for what, 20 years now?
20 years.
And you got me into like David Icke and of the conspiracy theory stuff like early on. I remember reading David Icke for the first time and like being so scared. I like couldn't sleep. I was like 20, 21 years old. I'm like, the reptilian shapeshifters are going to come get me.
You would call me up in the middle of the night. They're like, I think I see them. I think I saw reptilian shapeshifters in Trader Joe's.
Seriously, something about it just fundamentally like creeped me out, and like looking at pictures of like the queen mom, you know, in England, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a reptilian.
That's definitely a snake.
And David Icke, you know, he's off this rocker when you read his books too. I mean, like his connections to things are a little dubious, but there's, you know, I've always, I guess I'm a little bit of a closet conspiracy theorist in a way that I've always believed that there's, you know, an elite group of people running this world, or there's something, there's more to what we know behind the scenes. That said, I go between back and forth between that, if it's all orchestrated, or if we're just a bunch of dumb monkeys running around the planet. And lately I've been leaning towards more of the dumb monkey thing. I don't think our government is like organized or orchestrated enough to like stage something like Sandy Hook or even do, I just don't feel like we're that level of evolution or intelligence.
I do. I just think that there may not be that type of level of investigation into it, and that there may not be that type of a level of questioning.
I mean, come on, crisis actors, and they're going to like use the same crisis actors for like Sandy Hook and like Parker. No, okay.
I definitely believe in crisis actors. I mean, again,
don't you think we'd would have found that out by now, like noticing that. I mean, come on.
I just think that with anything, my thing is that if there are questions that need to be raised, then they need to be raised and they should be answered. Even if it's ludicrous, there needs to be some sort of accountability on all fronts of when something like of this magnitude happens, instead of just shutting everything down. Because that's where conspiracy theory came from. It came from the JFK assassination, where they wanted to shut down all inquiry and into all anybody that was coming out that was questioning that day,
yeah,
and did question the main, the, what their narrative was considered a conspiracy theorist, and that's where it started.
Well, that's, and then there, you know, that's where I question things, because there's there for so many things where, yeah, you think about conspiracy theory. I mean, there's definitely like an underbelly, yeah, to a lot of these. So, but that it, when it starts getting into the extremes is when I get a little, but I like being able to talk to you about this. And that's what I like about our friendship. Cause it's fascinating to me, even because some people are, you know, the second they know you're like anti-vaccine or anything like that, people just shut down. Like there's just such like a cancel culture now is like people, a lot of my friends, like people you can't even be friends with somebody that has a different viewpoint. And I've always liked to hear the different viewpoints, even if I don't agree with it. Like, I don't believe Hillary Clinton runs like a child sex ring out of a pizza place.
But I don't think she ran it, but that
she didn't run it.
I don't think
kids were getting like molested at a pizza place.
Oh, yeah, that's
for sure. But I'll sit here and talk to you about it, and, yeah, and you know, I'll, you know, and
that Pizzagate shit is so real. It's all gonna come
man.
Out. Oh my god. It's
you've been saying this stuff is going to come out for a long time now, and it hasn't come out. Also said Trump was going to be instated in January in the inauguration. That didn't happen either.
It didn't, but he'll be back probably in a couple of months. Probably by the end of the summer.
That's what he told the chef at the omelet station in Mar-a-Lago.
That's what he said. I'll be back in a couple of months.
Oh, you guys are getting married, yeah, here. Did you know I'll be back and reinstated?
I'll be back and reinstated. I do a bad Trump impression.
You're usually pretty good at impressions.
Yeah.
You are like seriously one of the funniest people I've ever met, though. You're freaking like, you're just your daily observations on life are just like so funny.
Oh.
Yeah.
Lather me up, sweetheart.
I know. Like, why, yeah, I feel like, you know, you need to be having your comedy specials out there.
Soon, my dear, very soon.
Soon.
Soon, just as when Trump gets in, I'll have my comedy
special. Okay, well, he hasn't gotten in yet.
Hey, that's why I'm, like, hoping. I've tied myself to that. And let the record show, I'm not a Trump supporter. I just want to live in a country where there was a fair election. That's all. I don't like the idea of knowing I live in a country where it's possible that people can just manipulate and orchestrate.
Well, and back to that with the, as a journalist, the monitoring of news is what, yeah, really disturbs me. Yes. And it disturbs me that other journalists aren't as concerned about it, because there's the status quo, especially with the younger journalists, like just how Facebook recently lifted the ban on news from, that COVID might have been created in a lab in Wuhan. And they had banned any sort of articles referring to that.
That's right.
And now they're inquiring into it. So that could have been the truth. And maybe they were banning news stories that could have been true. So where do you draw the line? That's what really concerns me, is when, like, how do you decide what should be news, what should be disseminated to people? And
but yeah, it's not Facebook's role to decide that at all. It's not Instagram. Well, Facebook is Instagram. It's
not Facebook is
Google,
a private company. I mean, is it a private company that it should be?
It's not a publishing platform, so it doesn't have the right to.
They can decide what they want, like Twitter. That's what their argument is. I mean, they can decide what they're a private company. This is where the Republicans kind of get their like, oh, freedom for businesses, but then, you know, well, should they be able to decide what they want on their news platforms?
I don't think so. Well, again, you're then becoming a publisher, but you're saying you're a free platform and you're just providing everybody the ability to express their opinions. Well, if you're going in there and, as you say, censoring people's opinions or censoring people's thoughts or comments based on what their narrative or what they're considering to be the truth, then you're not a free platform. Then you're a publisher, and you're very, very much deciding what goes against community standards. If I say, hey, I think this came from a lab, and you're saying, well, that goes against our community standards, well, then anything can go against community standards. It's just like they had an expose recently with Facebook where they were giving grades or rating and heavily weighting comments based on vaccine hesitancy. So if you were coming out against the jab, then your comments were then being thrown to the bottom being removed completely.
Well, the city, we just did a story. The city of Long Beach was actually using a new, like, third party site to monitor residents' comments on their stories and on the vaccine and different things to weigh people's opinions on and on reopening to like gather people's opinions. Yeah. And this isn't a shock, but the monitoring of news and what people are saying and controlling that is very scary. And I think it's just going to get worse. And we're not going to be able to find any of.
What do you think the answer is?
I don't know, because I don't know, like, if there should be some sort of government regulation, like forcing Facebook to not ban anything. Like,
well, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to remove the protections that they get as being a free platform. And then if you become a publisher, then you're open to libel. And then you're open to being sued by people that's saying you're censoring myself. You're censoring my free speech. If you're a free speech platform.
And I've always been more of a less government. So that's where it's like kind of a twist, because now we're asking the government to step in and have like a regulation for Facebook or Twitter to able to have
we're
sanctions.
We're basically looking at big tech. We're basically looking at Facebook, Instagram, which is the same thing. Twitter, which is Jack Dorsey. You're looking at Google, which is also censoring people. When you say something, I say this, that, and the other thing, and I have this, let's say you want to say Sandy Hook. And if you go Google Sandy, well, Google's going to tell you what you want to, what they want you to know, because the search results are going to be completely, twisted in their favor. So again, that's also, they're acting as a publisher based on what they consider to be the truth. So Google, Facebook, and Twitter are basically running how we decide or what we're being given as information.
Well, basically how we think. I mean, if they know you're Republican, they're going to feed you news that gears towards your viewpoints. Yeah. We're basically just walking targets for advertisement and control at this point. Right. I get very pessimistic because you ask me what I think. I don't know. I don't see a lot of hope there. I think it's going to get worse and more heavily controlled.
I don't think so, because I think I'm even though I'm so everything's going, everybody's against us and the world is conspiring for our demise. I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. I think there's a lot of platforms right now that are starting to find their way into being voices for people, such as, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff on Telegram. There's a lot of sites that are still like, I like the Epoch News. I don't know if you ever followed
them. I met a guy that works for them. Well, that's like kind of, isn't that like kind of owned by Chinese?
No, they're not owned by Chinese. I don't think they're owned by Chinese. I mean, they just seem to be in the middle of everything.
I read all different kinds of news. I read Breitbart for fun.
Breitbart's great.
Breitbart's not there. Oh, I love Breitbart. It's like just anger stirring. Like,
it's not.
But my point is I, even though I don't believe that, I read like all different kinds just so I can understand the other side of it.
Right.
And I think
too.
That in journalism there's a status quo way of thinking that it's interesting. Just even in my newsroom with not that many people, it's like, there's kind of one way of thought. And then that's why I say objectivity is a myth, because we're not robots, journalists. We're going to have our different viewpoints, and that seeps into how we cover things.
Do you ever have editors that are saying that take something out or criticize you or say, listen, you can't say this, or you're not allowed to say that, or I'm going to have to, you know, remove that item from your story because it's too much?
No, I've been pretty good on that. Cause I'm so balanced, and I've always been very careful about being fair, that I haven't had a problem with that. But I see it with the younger journalists, and they've even had stories on this in the New York Times, where there's a kind of a battle between the old guard and old school journalists, who I'm kind of like that too in a way, and then the younger, who think we should be more subjective and that objectivity is a thing of the past, and there should be this more like advocacy journalism and viewpoints, even in a newsroom like the New York Times.
And what would you consider to be the hallmarks of advocacy journalism and what you're seeing right now in media?
Well, just looking at the difference between CNN and Fox News, you know, there's no objectivity there. There's a straight agenda that they're pushing on both sides. So I think, just in more, when I look at traditional print journalism, I think that's going to go more of the way of what you see in the TV stations.
Well, wouldn't you consider print journalism anyway to be online journalism? Because not many people I don't see anybody reading.
Yeah, I mean, I write for an online news now. I used to write for print, and it's print's dead. It's dying. It's very sad, you know, and because that, I mean, that was a way for people to get really solid, like, news from both sides, because you're reading, like, a newspaper from front to back. And now it's just, you can pick whatever you want on
And that's online. Intentional because then not only now that you've mm-hmm. brought everything into a digital realm, you yeah. can control what people see. You control yeah. what mm-hmm. people have access to. And now mm-hmm. you're getting also paywalls for a lot of the print because they're trying to just make their money. And then it's harder to, you know, especially now I'm seeing more paywalls than ever, especially in local journalism. And
yeah, we're one of the few that doesn't have a paywall. Yeah. My last publication has a hardcore paywall because they yeah. can't make money. Right. I don't think they're going to be around. Like I wrote for the Orange County Register. Like right. I don't think they're going to be around another 5 years. Their circulation, nobody who subscribes to a newspaper anymore. So that has fundamentally changed. You know, how we, not only how we get news, but the type of news.
Right. And because then you have paywall. So everybody mm-hmm. needs a paywall right now. And if you're looking for news and I'm out there looking for the truth and I'm finding my way through millions of various rabbit holes.
Yeah.
And I keep getting to all these paywalls. Well, I can't in theory just say yes to $9.99 yeah. a month or $5.99 a month or all because then I, you know, I'd be racking up a serious bouts of bills. So it's like I have to say no to them. Right. So that, again, is going to limit my ability to connect to where I really think people like you are the truth because they're boots on the ground. I remember it was a great moment for me last year was I called you in the middle of the BLM
insanity. Oh, the riots.
And
man.
And you were like, yeah, I'm kind of a little busy right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they're looting
like right in the middle of like
they're looting the Forever 21 right now, stealing cheap shit from China. That was an interesting. What I have been faced with now is the wording, and one of the things I have had to rethink about my coverage. And yeah, that's been interesting because I was saying you know, protesters and looters, and people were like, well, you know, the protesters weren't looting, you know, they're different people. And I'm like, well, I saw some people were protesting and then yeah. some people were looting. And it's been a more, push to have a more like PC type coverage, like right. careful of how we word things in the past. And so I had to like be very delicate with how I had my wording with, you know, people that were looting the shit out of. Yeah. But that was crazy. And this is why I feel like it's so important to have journalists like myself, because we don't have local news journalists hardly anymore. We're lucky because we have an owner who's invested in our publication. But yeah. I mean, to have like somebody covering just a city and keep tabs on the city. I mean, that's just the key, like bread and butter. And it's important to know what's going on in your town. There's, and then to cover like corruption in the city. And yeah.
there's that very famous clip where you see somebody they were talking about, there was just a basic local news item where they were just talking about, hey, we need to be really careful about what we say. And it's very important to be, sensitive to people's viewpoints. And it was a script. And then they saw that script that was being repeated by hundreds of other news organizations all over the country.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. yeah.
So it's just that they're just reading a script. And so it's like your local 11 o'clock news are not.
Yeah.
They're also controlled and owned by the same corporate entities. So you're not going to get the stories that you need, and you're going to get a very slanted, and there, you know, there is somebody there that's dictating, hey, this is what we're going after. This is what we need to.
And I don't think like the LA Times, for example, is controlled by like a higher up that says you need to publish this. It's more of a control from an internal status quo way of thought.
Right.
As opposed to like there's some, you know, like Illuminati yes, higher up, like you need to print this story.
Right.
They
don't need to because it's very politicized and it's always going to yeah. be that the person in charge. It's like the person, I always think of, what's it called? House of Cards. And I mm-hmm. love the scenes about the newspaper. I think it was the Post and you really get to see the inner workings. I think that was very,
I have issues with House of Cards though, but you see the inner workings, but then there's always like, there's the trope of the female journalist that has to like fuck her source to like,
right, <yeah.
laughs> it drives me nuts. It's yeah. in like so many different, it was like the one that what's the one with like Katie Holmes and like the Thank You for Not Smoking. And yeah. there's like all these different, like movies where the female journalist has to like, you know, hook up with her source.
And
to,
then
like,
he throw her in the middle of a train.
Yeah. And then he throws her in a freaking, in front of the subway. For the record, I've never fucked a source to get any. I may have worn something low cut from the, yeah. no, I'm just kidding.
Oh, have you?
No,
you
I've never done yum, that. Yum. But yeah, it's like, that's the only issue I have with that. But
yes, Sophie, I agree. You want to come up? Come on. Come here. Up, up, up. Come on. You want to come up, up, up? Come
up,
on.
Up, up.
Come on. Go, go. You want to go up? I know you want to go up then. Go up, up, up. And up, up, up. And up, up, up. Up, up, up. You baby smushy.
Yeah. Yeah, Isaac treats this dog. It's not a dog. It's a small child. Or
she has a little baby.
It's a dog, but
she's my little baby.
This dog gets treated better
than most people,
most children in the world.
That's right. She eats better than 90% of India. But I was saying, yeah. So I think it's becoming more transparent as to where, as you said, the subjectivity is very.
It's a lot more transparent.
Obvious.
Yeah.
It's obvious where people's thoughts and opinions lie.
And people care less. The journalists and on the other side care less about the objectivity too. I think people are just, you know, especially with Trump, it was just this, at that point, I almost felt bad for him. Dare I say people would cancel me just for saying I felt bad for him, but the guy could not do anything. Like he would have done saved a bunch of orphans from a burning house and been like, you know, like,
oh, Trump saved a bunch of white kids. Oh,
yeah. Trump drops kid on the ground after, you know, like it was just like, he could not do anything. It was just, the media was so ruthless that it was like, I got sick of it. Like things have been pushed so far to the left that it scares me. I always kind of thought the control would come from the right. I didn't expect it to come from the left.
Well, as I've spoken about this before, is that you've seen a sea change, whereas in the early 2000s, it was the right that we were completely terrified.
Yeah,
of.
And that's when I loved listening to Alex Jones rallying against that.
Absolutely, and we all were. We were all against Project for the New American Century and the neocons.
The Bush administration.
We're like, you people are evil sickos, and we wanted that gone. And it just really goes to show how both sides of the coins ultimately are controlled. And I think they just shifted. They went from conservatism is evil and we need to get that out, and now, you know, the neoliberal is evil and we're worried about them. And I think I definitely believe that there is a major type of influence that's coming from China as far as the Democratic Party is concerned. I don't think it could be denied.
Yofi,
give her some attention.
She wants a little attention.
She wants more attention. And you're right. I think
do you think we're going to be at war with China?
No,
or something?
We already are at war. There's a silent war that's been going on for the past several years. I mean, you're talking these cyber attacks, you're talking the economic war, you're talking about the political war, you're talking about the infiltration about all levels of government. I mean, they're there in all cabinets and it's already happening. We've been at war for years, and I think you're really starting to see it coming out into the open more, and that's why.
I think there's going to be another pandemic. Let's talk about dating.
You want to talk about
dating? Let's just light it up. So how's your love life?
What love life? I got nothing.
So Lydia and I, my best friend Lydia, can you do your Lydia impression?
Z, how come he doesn't want to come out with me and eat ice cream? Z, is my lips fat enough for white boys?
And the answer is yes.
The answer is
Z. So, is this pizza gonna make me fatter?
So Lydia and I were talking yesterday and saying that if we lived in the Midwest or the East Coast, we'd probably be married by now.
Would you? Why the East Coast? What makes you think the East Coast?
I feel, and not that I want to be married, but I feel like the men in the East Coast and Midwest are just different than the men in LA. Like I feel like dating in LA, like there's just too many options. Like the market is just so saturated and men have different expectations, where I feel like there's some more like, you know, relationship like oriented type in the Midwest, and maybe not so much the East Coast, maybe Midwest, like Texas East Coast too. Don't you think?
Where East Coast? What East Coast are you talking
about?
I don't know.
Like New York. Well, maybe not New York.
New York?
Okay. No, not New York. Jesus. All right. So Midwest area. I feel like LA is impossible right now to date. Like I go and I look on the dating apps and there's like all these beautiful, like accomplished, like successful women. And then it's a bunch of like toads.
They're all fake. I've been through this. All the accounts are fake. They're not real. All those successful, beautiful women. They're all cam girls.
That's not true. There's like tons of, yeah, because if they look like a swimsuit model. Yeah.
And, and they're also, the problem also is if you're a bit attractive, you're getting 9 bajillion messages a day and 9 bajillion
I don't get
matches.
That. I message a lot of guys and they don't respond.
Also, guys are idiots and they don't have the capacity to, conversate or communicate.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys out there that are like just the basic like conversational back and forth I've found is
really lacking.
Yeah.
Because they've been they don't know how to do it. That there is a very specific.
I just wonder what it is about LA, and I have a lot of girlfriends in the same boat where it's like, it's just, there's all these great single women. And
oh, so you think there's all these great single women and all the guys are awful.
But no, the men are, they're like picky, or there's like a, you know, they're just,
well,
not,
I'll tell you what
down.
It is. I'll tell you what it is.
There's too many options.
There's always going to be somebody else, because this is very much a transient city.
Yeah.
And there's always a great turnover, and people are always leaving and people are always coming. Maybe not so much now because California is kind of a shithole with what's been going on. But there's always going to be somebody coming off the boat.
Yeah.
There's always going to be
somebody.
Especially LA. Especially LA. Especially this, you know, in LA proper.
Cute, I don't know, young 20 somethings trying to make it off, in
that's
the.
That's right. There's always somebody else around the corner. There's always going to, it's not like you have like a very contained gene pool in high school where there was like six hot girls.
Yeah. Like my friends in the Midwest, like half of them have married their like high school sweethearts.
Yeah.
Which sounds boring as fuck. Yeah, like, no. Good God, can you imagine? Like,
but that's
unless
what
you're
it,
gonna be swingers.
But that's
or something
what it is. Is that there's so, every time you go out, there's somebody else. You know, every time you go somewhere, there's somebody. You walk around the corner, there's somebody else.
Yeah, that's
and that again, it's also FOMO. It's FOMO. So everybody's like, there's somebody. You know, there could be somebody better. That's, you know, meant for
me. I feel
me.
Like a lot of the men have FOMO. Yeah.
And also, you know, you always think, and I think with the phones and with the dating apps, which is why I had to get rid of them completely, is because there's always somebody better one swipe away.
That's the thing too. I hate these dating apps. I feel like I'm like shopping for a dude on Amazon. Like I literally just buy like cat shit, like food on Amazon, and I'm like, oh, I'll shop for a boyfriend or some dude I want to. I'm like scrolling, like, yeah, that dude's like, I don't like his like teeth. No, yeah. It's like, it's just so easy to just like, you know, swipe left or no. Like,
but you're getting dates. You're getting dates.
But bear, I had two dates in one night the other night.
Two dates in one night?
Well, this is rare. Like, I don't usually do that.
That's what
it's
I'm
too
saying.
Overwhelming.
Like, you're still
but they're,
dates out the
they're
wazoo.
Toads. I went out with one guy who turned out to be a part-time drug dealer that lives down the street.
Part-time drug dealer?
Well, I guess he has a day job. So I don't know. Like, he seemed normal.
Is he trying to be a full-time drug dealer?
No, it's just his side gig. He seemed normal, like, when I was chatting with him. And then I met him in person, and he literally looked like he was, like, on coke, or he was, like, his eyes were, like, you know, and he was just totally, like, you know, and just rattling off about different things. And that was, you know, just way too. But then I met another guy after that, and he was like the opposite. He was like a little bit on the spectrum, really sweet, nerdy, like clearly hadn't been laid in a long time. And I'm like,
oh God.
You know, and it's like, I'm like, it was just a little overwhelming to get the extremes. I feel like I kind of get like either these Cro-Magnon types or
Cro-Magnon
who are like, I'm gonna like take you and,
I'm gonna
like,
bang you
right.
to kingdom come.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, I, you know, I can't have a conversation, but I, and then, or I get these like really sensitive types that are just kind of, you know.
And also there's false advertising, because everybody's curating their pictures and their profiles, and it's an avatar. It's a projection of who they want to be. And you're never going to get that in real life. It's going to be always, you're always going to have some sort of a letdown. It's very rare you're going to meet somebody that you're going to be like, oh, you're actually who you say you are.
Yeah.
Because everybody's selling themselves. And again, the biggest thing missing from all the dating apps is there's no vibe. You can't get that.
It's
that,
hard
that,
to.
The vibe is everything.
Like, I feel like I'm swiping on all these great guys, you know, just from an instant like yay or nay. And that's, But how else are you going to meet people these days?
Well, that's a problem. And especially with this, you know, influenza AB that's been rebranded as whatever the hell you want to call it is. Now everybody's walking around with their face pampers, and now everybody is completely doesn't want to even
face pamper.
They don't even want to look at you. Like, I'm like trying to, you just make eye contact with girls out on the street or at a Whole Foods or I don't know, just in my day to day interactions in the world. And they don't even want to look at you.
No, you can't. I don't like to look at, I didn't like looking at strangers before, but now with the pandemic, like, you don't even have to, like, because who knows? Oh, man.
But that's what's happened. Now we have been conditioned and programmed by this entire insanity that everybody is a walking vessel of disease. And but it's true.
It's true.
And now now you've created this intense paranoia of humanity. And that's why this this has to end. Well, because we're ruining our ability to connect with each other. Now, I've been seeing people, socializing is starting to come back, but it was always very clicky, and now it's going to be even.
It's super. Well, that's why you have to go on the dating site, because how else are you going to meet people? Like, dating the pandemic last year was weird, because I was newly single, like, after got out of a 10-year relationship. Yeah. And was all excited to get out there and like, oh, I'm going to get on Tinder and like hook up with a bunch of dudes. And then like the pandemic happened like 2 months later and it was like, but in a way it helped me weed out what I call the COVID weenies. But if you were a guy that wouldn't like, didn't leave your house and like cowered in the corner for like months and months and didn't want to meet me in person because you're so terrified, you're probably not the guy for me. I don't need somebody out there like, you know,
willy-nilly, just
like a Huntington Beach, like no mask or like fuck, da, 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 you know, one of those like bro dude anti-masker types. Like the mask drives me nuts too, but
the mask doesn't do anything, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, I kind of agree with you there, but at least it helps me weed out the guys that were like the hardcore weenies.
Well, who do you want?
I don't know what I want.
That's the thing. You have to be clear about what it is you want.
I don't know what I want.
That becomes a point of attraction. Well, you know.
How do we figure out what we want?
That's up to you. You have to kind of like.
What do you want?
What do I want? I don't know.
You want the whole package. You want like this perfect woman that doesn't exist, I don't think.
They do exist. I just haven't met her.
Her name has to end in Anya.
Anna.
That's Anya. Right.
I love the girls with the Anna, Juliana, Aniana.
So in a way, I respect, but I guess what I'm saying is I respect you for sticking to your guns and not feeling like, you know, you're going to settle and you will find the perfect person out there. But then at the same time, I wonder, like, does she really exist? Maybe you should think about dating people that you wouldn't normally date or think about outside the box.
I did think outside of the box. I mean, I really expanded maybe you might not believe this, but I really did expand my parameters.
Oh, you dated somebody who was like 45?
No, I really did. I cast a wide net for the last year of my dating app world.
Somebody a little bit chubby,
I cast a wide net and I was just like, yes, 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 yes. And whoever comes down the roulette, you know, the slot machine, I'll go out with them and I'll see what happened. And it was impossible still to meet people. Like, it was still impossible.
It's so hard.
It was impossible to, like, even if I was saying yes to women that I normally would never have said yes to, it was pulling teeth to get them to see me in person. It's even something as innocuous as a coffee date or a hike. Like, it was still pulling teeth. And I remember the last hot date I went out with was this really cute girl. And she was in, you know, she was a normie. Like, she had a normal job. And
a normie?
Like, yeah, she, like, cooked. She wasn't artistic at all. Like, I think she worked at some nonprofit or I don't know what the hell it was. But she was short and cute. She was perky and she was sweet. And I was like, you know, and she was tiny and a little petite girl. We went on a date. We were making out and everything. I could not, for the life of me, get her out again but she was still on a dating app. So it just seemed to me that she was like, well, that was fun. Who's next?
Yeah.
You know, and
that's
I think that's
the problem.
That's what the problem is that you can just go and you want it. You have this, maybe there's something better for me. And you know, when these dating apps weren't there, we were more in connection with what was in front of us and what was in our world.
That's a good point. Yes. It's like the dating apps have brought so many options that you just can't. I wonder if in the future, it's just more people are going to be single. Because it's, before that, like, or you look back at our, like, grandparents, like, you basically just met somebody and you married them, you know, and that was that.
Yeah, well, we got to figure it out, Kelly, because, you know.
I don't know if we can figure it out, man. I don't know.
There's got to be more. Maybe we got to go to, like, one of those, like, festival thingies. Like, what's that cool, like, hippy-dippy thing?
I'm not going to a fucking festival with all those people.
Lightning in a bottle?
No. What? Lightning in a bottle?
Lightning in a bottle.
Lightning in a bottle.
Isn't that one, like, kind of like a festival? Ones?
Oh, God. Shoot. No? You'd have to shoot. Like, you couldn't pay me to go to one of those things.
What am I supposed to do? God, maybe.
You're going
to
pick some chick at a festival. You think you're going to meet some chick at a festival?
I've got to go to some.
Hitting on some 20-something in some, like, platform boots, dancing to some EDM shit.
Thank God. I like the
Isaac, you're 50.
Don't say that. That's getting deleted. That's so getting
deleted. You can't delete that. Come
on. I will delete whatever the hell I want. It's my podcast.
You cannot delete that.
Delete, delete, delete.
Oh, now all of a sudden you can't
delete.
You censorship. That's censorship.
Oh, is it censorship?
Oh, now you're going to censor.
We're at 47 minutes. I've got to at least cut 20 minutes of this.
Okay, well, you can't. So now you can just decide what you're going to censor.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put it. Isaac, you're bleep. That's what's going to happen. That's what you're going to hear when
this gets
published.
That's a bunch of bullshit, man.
That's I need to go to, you know what I need to do? I need to go to a Comic-Con and hit somebody dressed as like fucking little Spider-Woman girl. And that's it. Then I'll be happy.
Some 20-something Spider-Woman girl.
28, and 29, oh my 30. God.
Isaac, you're 50.
I don't look 50.
You're beat.
I have the body of a 30-year-old.
You do look. You could pass for like 40 or like late 30s.
Late 30s.
You really could. I mean, I'm super healthy. Really...
And if I dyed my hair, I'd even look younger. Yeah. So I mean, it's all.
No, you really do.
Here's the thing.
You have no wrinkles or anything.
So here's the thing. If I'm this healthy and super, I don't mind if you're my age, but you got to look as good as I do at my age. How's that? I don't want somebody that's gone through the ringer that's like, you know, slop drunk, you know, falling on the floor puking for 25 years. And now they're like, I want to have a family. Like,
that's going to be me.
That's going to be you.
Drunk party girl. Drunk party 45. Girl.
Yeah. That's
I look okay for 40. Don't
you look
I?
Great. You look really hot. You got a date coming up after this, don't you? Yeah. You're on a hot date.
Yeah. We'll see.
You look great. Yeah. You lost weight. You're doing wonderful.
Yes. I think it doesn't have to be an extreme. Like you got some like, you know, what did you say? Like some 50 something Yenta like that.
Yeah, with the flappy arms. That's what scares me.
It doesn't have to be like a 25 year old or a 50 something old Yenta. There's all sorts of, you know.
There's all in the middle, but I'm saying like if somebody for me, it's got to be somebody that's as super in touch with their health, that's clean. That's
well, you're in the city for it. It's just meaning people.
Exactly. And where the hell are they? You know? You can't get to a yoga class.
You need somebody, you're a very unique person and you need somebody who's very unique too. Yeah.
I know she's out there. I'm not worried. I'm actually not worried. I'm not worried at all.
She's right there. She's laying on the couch.
Yofi. I've married to Yofi for the past 10 years.
I feel like my cat's like my boy. He sleeps on the pillow next to me. I'm like, oh, I'm never getting laid again. Well, you know, if we don't meet the one thing I do appreciate as I get older is my wonderful friendships.
Aww.
Like with you, who I've known for 20 years.
That's right.
Even though we don't agree on shit like vaccine and whatnot. We can still be friends.
That's right. And I think that's most important.
And that's what I feel like is really hard now because so many people just will completely cancel people now.
That's right.
Well, okay. So my final thoughts are, you know, what I will reiterate is that people should just listen to other people's different points of view and not be so cancel culture. Like, because I feel like I get something reading like Breitbart or all the other sides, even though if I don't agree, I feel like there's just a closed-mindedness that scares me now.
And what's an action step to kind of do that for people? Like, how do we get people to not be so, even people in our immediate circle, like I know that I may not speak to some people in my life right now because it's just,
I don't know. It's really hard because some people just don't want to hear alternative viewpoints.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe people just read different news sources.
I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
I think maybe we're just being poured into a direction where we get to be among people that are open-minded and, you know, I think the true friends in your life are the ones that accept you for who you are and that love you for who you are. Whether you agree with them or not, you can still have them in your life and be connected. And if they are not connected to you at this point, for whatever reason, based on your ideas, then they weren't your friends and they were people that you don't want in your life because you want people in your life that you want other people on the other side of the spectrum as, or you want different people. I want to have people that have completely different views. I don't want to just sit in a
I feel like that's what people want. Like, how boring is it to have, I go like on Facebook and I look at like to have everybody have the same opinion on everything. Like, it's so like tedious and like, everybody's like, fuck Trump, like Trump, like, and I'm like, it's like, okay, it's it.
You want everybody. You want the whole kibosh.
I like hearing the Trumpers and their viewpoints and the QAnon, crazy QAnon people. Like, it makes it interesting.
That's what this country's about. This country's about everybody. It's about freedom of everything. It's about freedom of everybody's viewpoint to say whatever the hell they want to say.
Well, people don't feel that way now and it's getting more extreme.
Yeah.
With the cancel culture, it's scary.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to have to just ride it out. I think you're starting to see maybe the beginnings of that not...
I would fundamentally disagree. I think we're on a path towards doom.
I think we're on a path towards sunny, happy, bright days where Yofi runs around and loves everybody and pees and poos to her heart's content.
Sounds like doggy heaven.
Lots of chummies for the little baby.
Well, Kelly, what a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful chat we've had on so many different topics. Freedom, expression.
LA dating.
Bad dudes. Toads, as you call them.
Toads.
And so thank you for coming on. You're the best. I love you. And I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Yay. Thanks for having me.
All right, my dear. All right, everybody. Well, there you go. That's the Free Brightness Podcast, June 7th, Prince edition. I want to thank Kelly Puente for coming on and dropping some serious knowledge. And I'm wishing her lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of luck with all those crazy toads out there. Hopefully you'll meet a Prince. Speaking of Prince, play some Prince music today, people. I recommend anything, actually. Anything you can find your hands on, just play some Prince. And listen, if I'm standing there in the freezer aisle, and I'm looking at the ingredients for the dairy-free mango pops, and I look over, and you happen to be standing there, and I smile at you, all you have to do is smile back, okay? It's just a fucking smile. It doesn't mean I want to take you and bang you behind the deli counter. It just means I'm smiling at you. It's a fucking smile, for God's sake. It's just a smile. Look at me!